This is HPR episode 2539 entitled, Interview, Austin Lee, and is part of the series, Interviews. It is hosted by Operat Zero R, and is about 46 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, Operat Zero R interviews Austin Lee.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
That's our noise floor.
See the rumble out of the background.
I scribbled some stuff down here. All right, so I'm here with Austin. I don't even know your last name. What is your last name?
Lee.
Austin Lee. Where did we originally meet? Like pre-meet, possibly?
I want to say, was it not a Fry's Electronics?
Fry's? Oh, for
Duluth?
Yeah, Hack Duluth. Yeah. So that was forever ago. So it was Hack Duluth. And then I remember you brought a big, like, at one point in time, you brought, like, a big ammo box that had, like, a light, like, a switch on it, like,
A big lighted switch that you find on a fighter jet with a cover on it. You flip the cover up.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you flip the switch, and the switch lights
up. What was in it? Was it just a battery?
It was a bunch of batteries and a small DC to AC inverter so you could plug your laptops in at the cafe at Fry's.
Yeah.
Because there was no power.
There was no power there?
There was no power there, and they did not provide Wi-Fi. And so that was another one of our group projects, was to bounce Wi-Fi from the hotel.
Yeah, there's like a hotel, like,
there's a Holiday
four blocks
Inn,
away.
Yeah, a Holiday Inn, probably about a half mile away, that I used my pickup truck in the parking lot, and we tried to set up a repeater with some antennas and beam it straight through the glass doors of the Fry's into the cafe. And I don't think we got any significant traffic. We were able to see SSIDs and some signal-to-noise feeds, but I don't think we ever got any log on traffic to there. We had some antennas hooked up to, oh, I believe it was a ThinkPad, old ThinkPad with a PCMCIA card that we bought at Fry's. I believe it was a D-Link that was hackable to add an external antenna connector. And that was a big deal. It was like $15 and you couldn't buy a PCMCIA Wi-Fi card that had an external antenna connector unless you're dropping like $80 or something.
Yeah, I never saw any of that setup for whatever happened with it.
Well, because it didn't work very well.
Because you had the Snoops, or whatever, Snake Dog.
Snoops? Oh, now I'm going to be in trouble.
You're going to be in trouble now?
Droops.
Droops. Snoops. Droops. Potato. He's on like a Navy ship or something right now. Or was that Ian?
I can't remember. I heard something about him at one of the last cons I was at. I really miss seeing all these guys pull up with car full radio gear.
Who was the guy that was very like G2, like the tech, he was more like that? Yeah, Droops, me, and I don't remember anybody.
I can't remember his handle. Was it Dalen? Dark hair? Skinnier guy?
Yeah, he was like a skinnier dude.
Mm-hmm. And he got several of us from Hack Duluth, he got us all hired on to America.
Oh, that's where the whole Primerica thing started.
Yeah,
that's funny.
So we were all meeting up at Fry's for a while, and then there were at least a couple of us that worked at Fry's. I didn't work there, but several people cycled in and out of a work shift at Fry's while we were grouping there, and then a bunch of us ended up over at Primerica doing big rollouts for their they were replacing all our machines campus wide. It's huge.
Yeah,
we were putting pallets of old PCs on the dock every day.
Because we did, there wasn't really anything else. There was like Hactaluth and like one other thing.
2600.
2600 was around, and I had gone to a few of them, but it was just Redstone.
It was about it. Yeah, it was a handful of guys, but it seemed to be like four or five like really old Linux sysadmins, and they seemed to be kind of the core at the time.
So, what do we got here? I never really got an information like how you got your start like in IT and like with computers in general. Like where did that whole thing start?
So my dad was always working in VoIP, and he was always doing computery stuff at work a little bit ahead of the main workforce curve. So we had a old office desktop machines in our house. Some of our earliest memories, some of my dad's favorite stories, and certainly finding out that we had figured out how to go into the DOS prompt and run Doom, while we were supposed to be being babysat. And here we are playing ultra violent video games in like 5 and 8, because we had managed to remember the necessary DOS commands to get into the system.
So was your dad working at Cisco at that time?
No, he worked at Rome, and then Rome got bought by Siemens, it was IBM, Rome, Siemens. So we worked in a bunch of telecom VoIP stuff for a long time. And we had like video phones in our house, like while everyone was while it was still
wired phones.
Yeah, dial-up modems, and here's a video, teleconference. All of it was awful. It required like three pieces of rack equipment to I think we ended up having like a T1 or something, and we ended up with some connectivity. It was pretty nice, but I still spent a lot of time working with some of my early stuff was really early Windows PCs, working with junk hard drives and stuff. I've loaded OSs off of floppy disks. And not just what floppy disks. Floppy disk box set.
Yeah, so it's mostly like your dad and home computers.
Leftover office computers, and then by the time I was getting into middle school, I was starting to build computers for my neighbors. So
were you in Atlanta at that time?
No, still living at my parents' house in Duluth, suburban Gwinnett County. So it was just literally the people that lived on the same street. I could walk out my front door and then down the street, ride my bike to somebody else's house, and they would either pay me to do something with their computer or mow their lawn or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it was
check of all my target organs.
Yeah.
I mean, often.
Computer.
Cat attack. It wouldn't be a podcast without a cat attack.
A cat attack. Stepping on the space bar to stop the stream.
Key sounds.
Let's see. Talk a little bit about your parents. I know they're real big into the because I was talking about foreign films and hating them.
Oh man,
you used to go like you said you're.
My parents were going to not only like a film like an art film like weekly or bi-monthly critique thing, where they watched like some epically heavy like art film, film festival stuff, but my mom's been going to Sundance for years and years because one of our neighbors has a place out there, and so my mom's been going to Sundance for years and see all these cool, cool art films and stuff, and then they're like next year to their Academy Awards and stuff. My parents are really cool. It's taking me a while to come around on this fact, but I definitely appreciate it now. And certainly the opportunity to play with a lot of this PC hardware, and they let me spend a lot of time with my head like 6 inches from a CRT monitor.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing.
I caught the tail end of all that stuff of like Prodigy Net or whatever. What is that? Can you talk about what's in the blue thing? What's Bug Spray or?
Oh, no. It's just rainwater.
Just rainwater? Oh, for what? Your plants?
Water in the plants. I got a bunch of. I've got a bunch of carnivorous plants that we inherited. Actually, I have one right here. And we ended up with several $100 worth of plants, lights, aquariums, all kinds of stuff.
Was that from the place or somewhere else?
This is from a friend, my girlfriend's that happened to be moving out of the country.
That's how you ended up in college.
He couldn't take all these carnivorous plants on the plane with him for some reason. I'm sure there's a, you know, important dangerous foreign.
You're destabilizing
the ecosystems and such. But
that's why you have pets.
Yeah, and so actually through my research, I found out that almost all of the carnivorous plants in the world originate in like part of South Carolina, North Carolina. That's real swampy and has there's practically no other, you know, bubbles of carnivorous plants anywhere else in the world. There's a handful, but they're very localized. Oh, and I also learned that the Atlanta Botanical Garden has their own cultivar of Venus flytrap that is beautiful. And next time that they have them out in the collection, I'm gonna have to go see them.
Yeah, let me know. So when did you were doing the computer thing for fairly early on?
Mm-hmm.
When did you get into music stuff?
This would be totally parallel. Also, my dad was also a part-time DJ during most of my childhood, and he did radio remotes for like 96 Rock.
What do you mean? What is radio remote?
You would do a promotion.
Like the band thing?
It would be a party. You bring some speakers and, you know, a DJ set up out to a pool party in an apartment complex typically. And Hooters would provide wings and, you know, someplace would provide pizza or something like that. There'd be some promotional tie-ins with some other businesses to provide, you know, food and drink. And they would bring the music and the gravity of the name, 96 Rock, you know, the local radio station. And they would literally call on a phone, you know, or have the radio station call them on a phone and be like, you know, turn the music up in the background and be like, yeah, we're having a crazy party over here at such and such apartment complex. And so it was promotions on all sides. But
I wonder if that was when they were doing like streaming through like bands and stuff. They do the live streaming stuff. You ever did any of that?
Oh, man, I don't know. This would have been through the 90s.
So you had DJ stuff to play around with growing up too.
I remember dancing to, you know, MC Hammer and all that kind of stuff in front of speakers that were exactly as tall as I was.
Yeah.
So from a very young age, I've now been able to hold a woofer up that was, you know, bigger than my entire, you know, arm spread. So
did you have more like? I never got any hardware until much later. Like, did you have any did you get hardware first and then do software, computer stuff, or?
It was all secondhand because I had a strong tendency to take apart and break things that were already in the household and that were working.
And
I was encouraged to take things apart, but I was strongly discouraged to take apart anything that was currently working. So almost all of my exploration started with physically disassembling computer hardware. Like, you know, if I can't get it to turn on, I'm literally going to pull the capacitors from the board, break them apart, crunch the resistors and see what's inside of them. Like, I wanted to know, like, what is this hunk of plastic and metal that does magic, basically? And it should be something that I can understand because other people can understand it. It shouldn't. Nothing that can be done with this machine is something that I can't do. And so that was always my outlook.
Never had any super interesting stories about breaking stuff, like electronics or anything, because I think my parents separated, so I was like 9, and after that it was just my mom, so she didn't really have anything that I had was my own. Well, anyways, but I would get rid of like malware viruses before we had that antivirus and shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have a whole lot of electronics around the house to fuss around with. I had to go get secondhand or go get whatever it was myself.
Dumpster dive kind of stuff. A lot of the earlier computer stuff, it would be, you know, a 40 megabyte hard drive or, you know, 400 megabyte hard drive or something like that. It was really outdated hardware, even when I was playing with it. And, you know, huge ISA buses. I mean, I still have my collection of, you know, processors. I still got Pentium 2 slot processors. I think those were some of the earliest boards that I really got working and got to practice installing operating systems over and over and over again, because that's what it took.
I thought about doing a bathroom and then it's like getting a getting a GoFundMe for people to send me all their old processors and make that the actual tile of the bathroom. Like put something overlay it and have a couple small bathroom with random.
Yeah, cast the whole floor in epoxy. Yeah. I've got at least 3 or 4 square feet of processors. I tried to shave the pins off some of them and make them jewelry, but they're the old processors are definitely cool to find. Because they're big and you can see all the parts on them, the pins and stuff. And I really would be interested to delid some of those and acid etch away some of the PCB and stuff. And, look at the. Because of the older processors, you'll be actually able to see the big transistor batches and you'll be able to see the tungsten processor.
Yeah, it's not all just one big embedded thing. No.
Yeah, the new stuff is, it's like looking into a fractal.
The receiver over there, I brought it pretty straightforward. It's got the big old capacitors, and it makes noise when you plug it in, and then the LED blinks. So you plug it in, and you hear the clicking of the relays, and then you hear the buzz of the transformer charging up, and then it goes on, and then turns the lights, starts blinking, whatever. So that'll be something to play with and take apart. But I want to talk about the groove machine thing. So I want to get some ideas what you think, how we could make it lighter or more portable, put it on a hand truck, or get nice batteries for it, or some way to make it, the other weird thought I had is buy a bunch of cheap generators somehow, and have them on the edge of strings, and you just throw them at people.
And then have them,
if you want to walk, you're going to have to crank the wheel, and then they just pass it around.
So this is a perfect intersection. I recently read an article about that. Somebody is throwing underground parties in Atlanta in abandoned spaces, and presumably they're using some sort of portable battery-powered sound system, and the commercial offerings for that have expanded dramatically. You could now buy a somewhat crappy plastic powered speaker that's similar to what you can get at Guitar Center for a couple $100. You can get it from China and you can get it with a battery already in it. And they sound pretty damn good. Yeah. And so it becomes a tear of what can I fabricate that's going to be competitive against some of the stuff that are able to blow mold out of plastic in China. And it's getting a little tricky. But I still have designs in my mind. I still think the backpack is the ideal form factor, because this is a mobile noise complaint.
Yeah,
you want to be able to take it with you when you need to go.
Yeah, if it's got wheels, you're gonna have issues going downstairs and stuff like that.
It's slightly less mobile. Obviously, it allows you to carry a vastly greater amount of weight, and I've probably destroyed the cartilage between my vertebrae.
Yeah. You said that's just too heavy. Yeah,
the groove machine is physiologically damaged me. So the groove machine's next iteration, I would think, should be something. I think there's a visual aesthetic to it that is helpful. Surely being able to blast sound is the number one priority.
LEDs are cheap, weight small.
Yeah, something that incorporates a light show. I've considered, I have an idea for either some sort of a blown air assisted banner or something that floats above your backpack, either on say some fishing rod type lightweight poles.
Yeah, the old samurai were when they were running around.
A little sail flag thing above you, but then you get the little LED pico projector and you can throw a light show or a logo or something like that. And certainly any fun that I could have with it, it would be nice to also have it a commercial angle so that I can make them. For money as well as out of the enjoyment of the device. I think the potential to use them, I see the Segway tours going around town. I see people, doing stuff where having a slight amplification to the voice would make a big difference. And certainly the megaphone is the old fashioned way of doing that. But I think, a headset with the groove machine on your back, and you want to give a walking tour of the city, you've got it covered. Throw a coin slot on there for tips, and you can just roam around and talk to yourself. People are going to put money in your back.
So what about, to give it more power and longer time, what about if you had just, two, kind of how you had it, have two people carry like battery parts or have it split up. Do you still want to split the load between like two or three people?
No, I think from here on, and I've looked into the way, how you distribute the audio, I want individual nodes. Ideally, each backpack would be an almost identical clone, but it would have a core, and then its case could be variations, essentially. Like you could have it could be a stereo or a mono backpack, but its only requirements that it would need to essentially be a backpack, or be highly mobile, relatively lightweight. I'm thinking lithium ion, the hobby motor style packs. Or drill batteries I've considered, and the potential to like 3D print a receptacle so that you could literally hot swap external drill batteries onto a real miner pack. But that wastes some of the internal cavity space of the groove machine. Could be an asset. I thought about, we could put drink dispensers in there, like the potential to have a small cargo area that holds a small battery pack or preferably a water pouch, because I'm pretty sure getting dehydrated and letting my spine pancake is what has put me to where I'm at now.
But you definitely would have more than one person carry the rig, right?
I think the new rig will have a source and multiple receivers. And the previous backpack was essentially a source and amplifier, usually me, and then two satellite speakers that were both the sound and the power.
Yeah.
And I think we could get it all in one, so that if you wanted to be a one-man show, you could put on the backpack, hook up either your mic or your guitar, and hit the street, or your MP3 player, your phone, or whatever, hit the street and make too much noise. Or preferably have some sort of receiver inside so that you get two friends with a matching backpack, so you get as many people as you can to show up in one place.
Yeah.
And the only way that I found a one-to-many low latency broadcast that has everything I'm looking for is FM. So I've pretty much come to the conclusion that micro broadcasting FM is the way to go for distributing audio in a mobile platform. Bluetooth has too much overhead.
So you can make it super modular if you just had the master, and then the slaves were just, you could just build a million of them.
Exactly. That would be all FM. And so I've got the FM transmitter. I've got a fairly good way of prepping the audio that goes into the transmitter so that I get maximum transmission out of it. Excitation. It's trickier than you would think. You plug your phone into a FM transmitter and it sounds like crap when you listen to it on your stereo. It sounds like whisper quiet. You have to do a little bit of magic to the audio stream before it really fills out its potential in the FM.
So you think, from the modular perspective, you can hold your own power and speakers?
Absolutely.
If you had the right batteries?
Yeah, and they're...
And the right speakers, like, get some... If you want to do crazy, you get some, like, lightweight Bose and, like, a ridiculous battery, and then it would only weigh, like, 50 pounds or 10 pounds or something.
Right? I every once in a while, every couple months, I fill up my Amazon or my Parts Express catalog, shopping cart with the parts, and I have some of the parts.
Like a wish list?
I have some of them already. There's a Class D amplifier sure that I've got. It's four channels, so it'll give me some really heavy duty stereo.
Yeah.
Each speaker would have its own independent power source, like 25 watts. Like, it would be absurdly loud. Yeah. It gets to be an issue of tuning the cabinet for the drivers, especially when you're going to put that much power through them. But thankfully, these really efficient amplifiers that we've got now, the Class B amplifiers, the tripod stuff, they sip so little power. Like, it's nothing. The car audio stuff that I was using before is
weighs a ton.
It weighs a ton, and it doesn't efficiently use the power. I had a huge cap, on the old system. Which looked amazing and provided a very necessary resource, because when the bass would kick, there'd be a huge brownout on the amp, and it would actually click out sometimes.
Awesome.
Yeah, and you could see the with the sustained bass hit, you could watch the voltage drop rhythmically. Nice. So the new tri-path amplifiers, new Class D amplifiers, and the lithium ion battery packs are hands down, pretty much the Bluetooth speakers they're pushing now, yeah. are really close, and they've done exactly what I'm talking about. They've tuned that cabinet. They've, you know, they've run an audio suite through the cabinet to see that, oh, you know, it resonates too much here, and you get boosted here. So
do you think the other part could be like how you control it? Do you have any ideas around how to control the audio? Like do they have like an Apple app or an Android app that we could put on a tablet that would let you do
change the levels of the
remote? Yeah, speakers? Or even do like live mixing from a tablet, or is that not ready yet?
So they do have, there are many mixing softwares.
Like Traktor.
Yeah, I think there's a Traktor
through the iPad.
What I have done is I put my laptop on my back and run a full version of Traktor on a little remote screen, and I've got the mixer that I wear on a guitar around my shoulders with a screen mounted on it. It looks pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a guitar with a mixer instead of strings, so
it's
a nice visual effect. But the screen's a little too small, and I've come to DJ with a lot more buttons and controls at my fingertips.
Yeah.
So having to use this clumsy, half mixer that I'm used to is torture. It's like, oh, I can't get the thing I want to do. It's gonna take me either too long to do it with my hands, or I just don't have enough hands to.
So you would rather have like a hardware controller.
I need a big custom hardware controller. Personally, I think a lot of DJs would have to go in that direction, especially if it's something you're going to carry around mobile. If you're going to be able to set it up on a table, then it can be a more traditional CDJ mixer, even really simple controls. But I think
you can just take one of those shitty Traktor controllers and just like throw it in your lap, and or you can get a couple of them and tear one of them apart, and then if you fuck it up, you'd at least have one more to like whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I'll take it. You know, the idea would be like to buy one of those little cheap Traktor things,
tear
it apart, and then make it however you want to make it to be portable. I don't know if that would be an idea.
That's kind of what I did with the mixer. It doesn't have any jog controls, which I think would be nice now. The cost on a lot of that stuff has come down. There's cheaper, there's more toy-like versions of some of the DJ control stuff that I could prototype with.
Yeah.
And that would, that would be a perfectly acceptable end product. Also, like a really cool cobbled together, speak and spells, some staples. Get it all running. But the bottom line would still be that you kind of have to have a fully fledged computer, somewhere on you running the source, which I don't think is necessarily too big of a problem.
Yeah, we could get it, for like $300, we could get a PC machine.
Drop it on the back, and so the transmitter. So you have your transmit unit, which may or may not be a root machine. But here's one of the interesting things. So say I'm pushing all this audio out to FM. FM has somewhat of a limited spectrum. If I want, bass. If I want low frequency. If I want to hook subwoofers up, which is a pretty high goal for a mobile sound system. then those subwoofers would pretty much need to be hooked in into me, the source. That's the only place where the low frequencies are going to exist accurately. Because once they go over the FM, they're not going to be accurate. You can kind of recreate them on the other end, but it's going to be muddy. So I actually do have these, they're bazooka tubes that look like nitrous oxide tanks for car. Modding and stuff. Yeah, so it's supposed to go in your visor or whatever, and it looks like a NOS tank.
So if you wanted to do a sub, your worst case scenario would be physically plugged into someone or something.
Yeah, and that would be the thing. You could do a ported sub on the backpacks.
Yeah.
I don't see why not. Yeah, I guess do a stereo amplifier that runs either two or four speakers. And then have an additional amplifier that does just a sub.
I'll write an app that goes into open Wi-Fi and discovers Bluetooth
and wireless receivers automatically hacks him and bridges him. So when you're walking by somebody's apartment, and all of a sudden, just like boom, boom, boom.
That's there's
like what the hell?
There's definitely like, well,
you left your Wi-Fi open, and you got a receiver with Bluetooth and
just take over all the Chromecasts.
anything.
All the Apple Musics.
Yeah, it was just an audio auto phone. It would just automatically try to compromise and take over any audio systems. Because there's so much of that out there. There is the iPhone, the Apple's iPlay, AirPlay, mm-hmm. Then you got Chromecast, and then the receiver, another receiver I got has Bluetooth on it.
And tons of desktop software is a DLNA.
Enabled already?
Yeah, so you can stream to or from it.
I think mine's set up by default, and you can just connect to it through DLNA and play stuff through. That would be quite hilarious.
Yeah, I would definitely be interested in that. You almost at that point you wouldn't necessarily want it to be the music because the liveness of the effect. I think of when we've taken it out on the streets and into crowded rooms and densely populated places. It has a very magical live effect on people. Most people. Some people are upset. Reasonably upset. Yeah. It's an obnoxious thing to do. but so much fun. I think the audience is there for it. And it's certainly if you're going to do like a bar crawl or something, like having somebody with a big light up, you know, music thing that they can talk out of, would be super attractive. And I've looked at different materials. Certainly something cool like acrylic where you can see the guts of the machine and all the working electronics would be cool. That kind of goes with the original aesthetic like a little bit.
The build itself, like visual.
Mm-hmm. A little bit exposed because you don't necessarily want it to be a black magic box like everything else in our lives is. My phone is a black magic box. My car underneath the hood. I don't know what anything does. It's covered by a big plastic wall. And I have to assume it does magic under there. I like dispelling the magic wherever possible. So I, if nothing else, at least some sort of window or a faceplate with a wiring diagram on it.
Just take the cover off of whatever it is you buy and just let it.
Oh, that's I mean that's
sit out there.
That's exactly what we took.
Spray some of that. Spray stuff over it so it'll protect the leads and stuff. But
it's actually great.
See everything.
Yeah, so we took the lid off the amplifier that used to be on the original rear machine and stuff up down in the basement now. But when it would rain, there would be anomalous effects.
Cheers. Thanks.
Yeah, there's some fuck ups in the rain for sure. Yeah, and we caught fire one time.
Caught fire one time. That's good.
Pretty spectacularly. It was
because of the rain?
It was not rain related. So we had this big system. I got sealed lead acid batteries in each of the groove machine backpacks, and then the center pack with the amplifier. So all the power had to come out of the backpacks with the speakers where the batteries are. It had to come out two wires back to the amplifier, and then the lines to the speakers had to come back out to the backpacks also. So there was
a loop. Yeah.
So it was four conductors total. Two power, two sound. Then one speaker's left, or one backpack was left, and one backpack was right speaker. I'd like the future ones to be stereo, but we can figure that out. Maybe a little toggle switch. Again, I've diagrammed a lot of this on some notebooks, and there's a lot of possibilities. The cables were kind of cumbersome, and there's a rule, specifically at DragonCon, where you're not allowed to have your costume attached to anybody else. So you can't have a person on a leash.
Sure.
You can't have two people whose costumes, you can't have a front of a horse and a back of a horse where they're attached together.
Huh.
Like, you have to be independent so that they can screen you and count you as two different people.
And you'd have people, come in with, clothesline.
Accidentally.
You'll get
trampled if you're attached to somebody else just in general because the crowds are pretty intense. So we were trying to conform to that because they had stopped us at the doors multiple times and be like, hey, you guys are literally tied together. You can't do that. And we'd be like, well, we can't really, we could technically unhook, but it's a pain in the ass. So we got some trailer disconnects, quick disconnects, for hooking up the power and lights from a vehicle trailer.
Yeah.
And so that actually was, they're very robust connectors. I spent thousands of dollars on them. And then we couldn't get the, we had trouble getting the wires to slide down the tubing, so we had to go to the store and we couldn't. I didn't know that you could just buy lube for this at the store. So we went to the sex store, bought a little sample of sex lube. Not his water-based or maybe silicone-based lube.
Yeah.
And so there we are, like, tearing off these, like, little one-time use sex lube things and squirting them into the tubing and then shoving the speaker and the power wires through. Yeah, so we spent much of an afternoon. I got some pictures of that project.
Nice.
And we, plugged them in, and we had these big, now somewhat heavy because of the weight of the physical connectors and the weight of the tubing on the cables. They're now kind of heavy, and so we start walking around with them at Dragon Con a couple days later, and when you know it, one of the connections gets hot inside of one of the trailer connectors,
sure.
And it shorts inside of the connector, and then the whole thing, wiring all over the place, starts getting hot and starts shorting out everywhere. And I swear, this speaker went like full jack liner. Like, the two guys on either side of me, one of them turns like, "Hey, these cables are getting hot." Like, I'm like, "Well, that's not good." And I turn and I look over, and there is like glowing orange behind the speaker cone. Like, you can see the light from inside of the speaker box pushing out through the speaker cone. And then after a few seconds of that, smoke under pressure starts going, like, spreading out from around the speaker flange on all sides.
Nice.
Like, it was, like someone lit a smoke bomb inside there. Like, it was pushing heat and smoke out on all sides, and
nice.
I still have the wires from it as kind of a safety reminder to myself.
That's awesome.
Yeah, worst case scenario, it absolutely caught fire in there, and we had sprayed all the cabinets with this truck bed liner. So it was still a little tacky, to be honest. So it had a nice rubbery coating on the outside, very grippy, good aesthetic. But if it had caught fire, it would have burned like a tire, and there would have been no way to put it out. And so there we would have been standing on the sidewalk, like, watching the whole thing like burn into a melty puddle. And I'm sure the police would have.
So maybe like you see the little Mr. Foggers with the little disc that gets real hot?
Yeah.
We could just have one of those on one of the backpacks that's like connected. Yeah, because the one I have, I can even give it to you, it's got a little circle of LEDs,
mm-hmm.
and then the part disc that gets part is in there, and then you can just have like a cup,
mm-hmm.
and then you go to your cargo area mm-hmm. to put more water in it, or just find some water somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you walked around, it would just be like a trail of steam.
Fog.
So that way, if something actually did catch fire, you'd be like, no, it's just the Mr. Fire. It's fine. There's no actual fire here.
So I also, I want to make an impact on people when they have this sudden and bizarre experience of being assaulted by loud music unexpectedly. And I've always thought an olfactory signature would be a nice thing to add to any sort of art experience. So I'm thinking of burning a particular brand of incense at every performance or every outing of the group
sure.
team to create a mostly a subconscious association with that smell.
Sure, sure.
And strange things.
So like encounter all the senses. It'd be like smell, hear,
mm-hmm. blast of light.
Light, and then touch. I didn't touch. To each other, I guess.
There tends to be a lot of
touchy
crowd,
really.
Yeah. It gets to be a pretty touchy crowd, and they break a sweat, and inhibitions come down.
Oh, I'm sure. If you're walking around drinking, that whole thing, the whole idea of walking around drinking with something heavier on your back doesn't sound like the best of ideas. But to your point, if you did it FM,
mm-hmm.
and it was modular, you could keep auxiliary batteries somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and people could walk around, and then when they got tired, you could just give the backpack to somebody else.
And we did have a lot of backpack handing off. And I think since you'd be transmitting over FM, you could say, hey, if you've got a boombox or if you want to hit the thrift shop on your way to the gathering tonight, get a boombox and some D batteries.
Yeah.
Then there's an entry level groove machine that you can bring, or you can show up with a token presence that you can still crank. And then the only problem with that is with FM, you have the entire other half of the FM spectrum is your competition at that point.
Yeah.
So people don't like what you're playing, and they all brought boomboxes, and B103 is doing like a killer club night or something.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna lose out. So I think it'd be interesting to see if you could keep a crowd that all had their own noisemakers, tuned to one frequency. I see a lot
or just have it inside of the headset, they could join their phone to it, but the phone wouldn't be much of a speaker.
Yeah, and so a lot of the big problem becomes latency. If you do any sort of digital transmission, if you're Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, stream, cast,
doesn't matter.
If you're doing a Twitter stream or a YouTube stream, yeah, it all gets garbage stuff if you get two devices near each other. But it works okay as long as they are far enough away that you can't hear each other. So you could independently, DJ or broadcast to multiple locations as long as they didn't overlap.
Yeah.
So the potential there, and you have a lot more control over a digital system like that. You could say, I want this to be the volume of, whatever. Whereas if you've got everybody hooked up on FM and a plane flies by or somebody else from the transmitter drives by, we had a lot of interference initially. And I think it was because of the antenna I was using. But we did have a setup where I had my laptop around my neck with a crate in the shoulder pad. And the FM transmitter and some batteries and an inverter. And so I was running around with the whole laptop with tractor and a controller around my neck. And everybody else was running around with the Groove Machine and then a receiver. And we tried a couple different things. And the FM was one of the better sounding ones. Because I had a UHF stereo receiver that works pretty well too. But it is narrow as hell on the tuning. So, we went around a corner and you walked between a pillar, the source to the link. Yeah. It was super loud. That was a big problem.
Yeah, that's probably some of it. Is it just like audio quality doesn't really matter all that much when you're walking around in circles.
But audio control, it's okay to have a somewhat crappier sound or a mono sound.
Yeah.
But it's not okay to have crazy transients, in the sound.
Or just a straight up complete delay. So if you did like a Wi-Fi with DLNA, it doesn't automatically like do the syncing or like it wouldn't sync it to the master.
Every client gets to decide how they're gonna buffer it.
Yeah, because the buffering it buffers.
Oh my god.
So you have to have some kind of mandatory.
I
know there's whiz bang shit out there. There's protocols out there like Zigbee or whatever that does the whole house Wi-Fi and it's all Wi-Fi. So I don't know how they do it. We might get hacked together.
By synchronizing the delay, they have to be able to hear each other to some degree.
Yeah.
To all be able to decide that they're going to use a common, not a common delay value, but a delay value that gives them a common final.
Well, wouldn't they just do it based on time? So they say everybody start your buffer here and then start playing. But if you make it all time, you just make a ridiculously high buffer and then make the time be like.
Yeah,
that would be the
everything
same.
Everything plays with a 30-second delay.
Yeah, no matter what, it would just be as long as the time is exact on everything. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's how they. It's probably how they do the other stuff.
I've tried similar stuff because I've tried multicasting audio, and I want to do multicast video around the house. So I can have the illusion of having different television channels that only play what I want and play fake hilarious commercials instead of real commercials. But I've looked into Raspberry Pi setups with like Mumble and Murmur doing audio streams over Wi-Fi with super low latency and being able to set a common buffer, which should give me a real-time thing. I actually had them running all over the house at one point, had intercom, Raspberry Pi-based intercoms running this very microphone, in fact.
What did you say, the Hubble?
Mumble?
Mumble, yeah.
Mumble and Murmur, which are like gaming.
Mumble is the one they use for HPR.
It works great. I highly recommend it. It's extremely lightweight. It runs really well on the Raspberry Pis. The only problem was that there wasn't the version of the client that I had didn't have the headless version for command line, so I had to boot all the way into the Raspberry Pi desktop and then have a script load the visual version of the interface and then configure it.
Weird.
Rather than being able to run like a single command
script.
Weird. Yeah.
What is the 8260 hashtag thing? What is that?
Oh, okay. So I've got some 8266 ESP 8266 little Wi-Fi modules, and I've played around with a bunch of people's like bad Wi-Fi kind of code on GitHub, and I've come up with a custom Arduino sketch that lets me blast my hashtag, basically. So you put in a hashtag that you want to show up in everybody's list of Wi-Fi things, and it does your hashtag hash symbol, handful, whatever characters you choose, and then a random number of the symbol, and then it does your hashtag again, and then it does it again, and that's the SSID. Does a new MAC address every, it generates hundreds of new MACs and SSIDs a second with these new things. So you pull out your phone or you pull out your laptop, and you look at the available Wi-Fi, it falls off the screen. It's like, for every second you have it open, there's another 10.
You can even do that with the machine. Just have a script running in the background on the laptop that's like spamming the shit out of everything when you're walking down the street.
So it's a cool project, and I've flashed a bunch of my ESPs to do this one thing, because it works better if you have multiple ESPs running the same sketch near each other. That way you get a handful of different strength values. So they show up really weird in iPhones and Apple devices sometimes. Each Android or each OS kind of has its own way of showing these slightly out of spec SSID names.
Weird.
So it's highly effective. The only reason it's worth bringing up is because it's totally working. It is my viral marketing thing. I left it at the bar that I DJ at, and I'm getting an additional 30 or 40 views across my Facebook page every day. People are showing up. They're trying to connect to the Wi-Fi at the bar, and they're seeing my hashtag 100 times down their screen. At least some of them are then going to Google, who is doing this? What does that mean? Am I hacked? Because this hashtag is showing up.
I did that with the evil Wi-Fi or whatever, and you could spam. And I did that. To the neighbor. Neighbor had annoying dogs. So I was like, "Shut your dog up!" And I just left it near the corner of the house for a couple of days. And so anybody over there trying to get their Wi-Fi on would hopefully get the message, because we have nothing but dogs around us. So, but I messed with that a little bit. Well, cool. Is there anything else you want to chat about? I think that's enough rambling for today, at least. We got some homework to do for the groove machine.
Yeah, definitely.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.